He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Leave your cup of worship beatenu, Eretz Zion, Yerushalayim.
You know the words?
Sure, yeah.
Come on, sing along. That's it?
No, this is a different song. I don't recognize this.
What's this one, Crash?
Oh, maybe it is.
Okay, here come the wordy part.
Quite a big build up. No, this is not it.
Where'd you get this off some Goyim website?
Oh, wait, maybe this is it now. There we go.
Come on, sing.
I don't want to ruin this guy's
come on,
voice.
Sing. Oh, Marty, his father was a cantor. It's Israeli Independence Day. Happy Independence Day. Our brothers and sisters in Israel, in Noam's case, literally.
You know, they don't celebrate it today there.
When do they celebrate?
It's on the Jewish calendar, so it's a different day. It was a couple weeks ago.
Of course.
Well, happy Independence Day, whatever calendar you are using. But I tell you, folks, it cannot escape the attention of every person in the United States and the rest of the world that Israel's Independence Day is being recognized, celebrated as it should be celebrated. But it comes the day after Pope Francis and the Vatican announced that they want the Palestinians to have their Independence Day as well. So the Vatican, the Holy Father, have come out in favor of independent Palestine. So today I want to debate with you all the impact that the Holy Father has on the Israeli-Palestinian debate. But I don't think there is any debate, and this is where I want to start, over the need to have positive train control to prevent knucklehead engineers from driving their doomed trains 106 miles an hour in a 50 mile per hour zone. I mean, I think it's absolutely outrageous. I mean, if it had been implemented as it was initially mandated, positive train control would have prevented that engineer on runaway train 188 from killing all those people on board by speeding through that curve. I don't know what happened to him. He says, his lawyer says, he doesn't remember what happened. How convenient. He blacked out. Maybe he was on his cell phone talking to his girlfriend. Remember the Metro North disaster in the Bronx? Spuyten Duyvil, same thing. I mean, he blacked out. He fell asleep. There's always some reason, some excuse. But instead of accelerating the process with an emergency grant to install the positive train control after the Metro North disaster, what happened yesterday? House Republicans voted to cut funding for Amtrak. So, Noam, introduce the engineer who is on the line now to the extent he feels comfortable.
Okay, well, somebody I've been chatting with for a long time, engineer for a local commuter train line, and I thought the perfect person to tell us how this all works because you and I don't know what's going on behind the controls. So, welcome on, and we won't even use your name. How about that? We'll just call you Mike, for lack of a better name.
Now, before we bring Mike on, and hello, Mike, is Mike... We were among the first, if not the first, to broadcast that the train was probably going too fast.
Right.
Was Mike your source?
He could have been. He may have been.
All right. So, okay. Enough about that. Mike, tell us about positive train control. Is this as simple as it seems?
Yes, it is, because it's all automatic. And if you're exceeding the speed or approaching a restricted speed curve, it will automatically sense that and apply the brakes in a normal manner to slow the train down so you don't exceed the maximum authorized speed on that curve.
So there is some electronic signal, I guess, from the track itself to the train that if the train is going too fast, it slows it down. How does it do that?
Well, I think the positive train stop works with GPS signals. So with the newer locomotives, it'll sense your location. And that's how it would alert the locomotive to where you are and what the maximum speed should be.
So one machine talks to the other machine and says, you have to slow down, and it slows down automatically, even if the engineer is passed out, drunk, dead from a heart attack. Regardless, the train will slow down automatically.
That's correct.
All right. Now, Mike, you've been an engineer for over 25 years. Now, we understand that in the January-February issue of Amtrak, Inc., they say that Amtrak has already equipped 400 miles of track with this advanced system, including the New England line from Boston to New Haven, the New York line from New Brunswick to Trenton, the Mid-Atlantic line from Perryville, Maryland to Wilmington, Delaware, and then you had 1,200 miles of track, including the rest of the Northeast Corridor, that was still to be done. Why has it taken so long, Mike?
I think it's all political right now. Congress, I guess, is trying to enact to have this done, and somebody's putting the kibosh on it.
Well, you have the Association of American Railroads, and I remember doing a story, Noam, on 2020. We did an hour about how bad the rails were and why there were always one serious accident at least every single day. And we went up against this Association of American Railroads, and it's like going up against the NRA. They're a very strong lobby group. They attack you. They attack you personally if you point out, the failings in the system. So they argued, the Association of American Railroads argued, that this deadline, there was a deadline imposed. The Congress mandated that the system be installed throughout the nation's railroad systems by the end of 2015. And that came after the 2008 Metrolink head-on. Remember that one in Chatsworth, California, killed 25 people, injured more than 100. So they said, you need this positive train control. So then you had the Association of American Railroads, which is the owners group, saying, wait a second, we can't meet that deadline by the end of 2015 because of the high cost involved. They say it's going to cost $10 billion. And they've already spent, they say, $5.2 billion. I'm getting a lot of this information from an excellent article in the New York Times by Jad Mawad. So Jad's done some research for us here. So you have a situation where they have to fit 36,000 units, 26,000 locomotives at a cost, as I said, of an additional $10 billion. And yet it seems to me, Mike, the engineer, that a value judgment has been made here, that it's just not worth spending the extra cash right now, that they'll get to it when they get to it. I mean, I want you to tell us how you feel as an engineer.
Well, Amtrak still wants federal funding, so they're probably stalling on that. They would like to have the extra money to do that. There's also another safety feature that I don't know if you're aware of. They actually have it coming into Elizabeth. They have a 55-mile-an-hour curve there and going in both directions. Even though you don't go by a signal that tells you to slow down, the train picks up a signal in the cab signals that makes you slow down to 45-mile-an-hour as a reminder of your 55-mile-an-hour curve ahead. That's not positive train control, but they could have had that in that area.
So that's another automatic system they could have installed to prevent this tragedy.
Yes, we call it a phantom signal because there's actually no signal there, but your train, the cab signals drop down to 45 mile an hour, and you have to slow down for that 55 mile an hour curve.
Well, I have to say, reminder. I get you. I have to say, 1,000 people dying every year on rail accidents. It is, and I use this term again and advisedly, it is to me outrageous that we rely on this ancient infrastructure and rely totally, it puts everything, the fate of all the people on board in the hands of the pilot of the train, of the engineer, of the, and what do you make, Mike, of the excuse that he doesn't remember anything?
Well, anytime there's a traumatic accident like that, you usually don't recall. I don't know if he's trying to hide something or he actually has, head trauma and can't recall.
Now, is there a union that tells people to clam up?
It probably would be in his best interest until he lawyers up, because there's going to be a lot of civil suits after this.
As well, there should be. They have not. Now, is it a fact, Noam, that they still haven't accounted for all the passengers?
Yeah, there's one passenger that we know of.
At least one.
Yeah. You know, can I ask Mike something? Because I'm curious about this. When this engineer was coming out of Philadelphia, would there be any reason for him to be going 102 miles an hour? Do you think, do you have a theory in your head? Did he fall asleep? Was he trying to make up time? Was he late? What could have been going through his head that he decided to be, that he would be driving so fast?
Well, I don't have this as fact, but I heard the train was about 10 or 12 minutes late out of Philadelphia. So he could have been trying to make up the time, but he should have known the railroad and what speeds he was encountering went up ahead. And he probably wouldn't have fallen asleep because the locomotive that I see, engine 601 there, is one of the newest locomotives that Amtrak has on their fleet. And they're equipped with top-of-the-line alerters in there that the faster you go, the more that alerter tells you to touch me and let me know that you're still alive and awake.
What are the mechanics when you have to actually get in this? I'm sure in your 26 years, you've probably had to pull the brakes once or twice. What happens, and why did you have to do it?
Can you say that again?
Yeah, have you been in this position before where you've had to pull the brake and yourself, and what happened?
The emergency brake.
The emergency brake.
Oh, yes, of course. I've killed a couple of people already also, so you have to hit that emergency brake as soon as you see danger coming. And
what do you mean you've killed a couple of people?
They've stepped out in front of me. They've walked into the side of me. It just happened so fast, there's nothing you could do. And
what's that like?
It's terrifying. It's hard to explain the feelings you have for that, but it's something you have to deal with.
Mike, I appreciate your candor, and I appreciate you coming on. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.
But ladies and gentlemen, I have to come back to where I started. I mean, Mike just talked about a remedy just on that one curb outside of Philly, North Philly, that could have worked, just a local problem, a local solution, that, like the one he described outside of Elizabeth. But the fact that they have this technology, positive train control, the fact that they have installed it in, that Amtrak has installed it in 400 of their 1,600 miles of track in the east, and that they are dragging their feet because of the cost involved. At the same time, the Congress of the United States yesterday voted to cut funding for Amtrak on the theory that Amtrak offers a service and should be closer to being a for-profit business. But to cut the funding for Amtrak when this necessary safeguard technology exists and has not yet been implemented is, to me, exactly what is wrong with Congress, where a philosophical or ideological objection can get in the way of saving lives. How many more disasters? The guy was 10 minutes late. There was nothing to stop him from gunning that thing, from putting the pedal to the metal. 106 miles an hour in a 50 mile per hour curve. And now 7 are dead. Another is missing. Hundreds of lives have been disrupted. This is absolutely unforgivable. What do you think, 866 Geraldo? I'm going to talk more about this and then segue into the Pope and Israel and Palestine.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
They are struggling to right the overturned cars from the Amtrak train 188. It was traveling at 106 miles an hour before it ran off the rails to such devastating consequence. My question is, why in the world don't they have the positive train control that automatically restricts the speed of the vehicles when it's necessary, as it was obviously necessary here, doing 106 in a 50 mile an hour zone? It is outrageous. Congress cutting the funding of Amtrak instead of aggressively seizing the problem, seizing the moment, fixing this disaster. Don't you need to feel confident? I mean, it's one thing to be nervous when an airplane takes off, but to be nervous that your train's going to go off the tracks every time you hit a curve, I mean, it's ridiculous. Hey, Ken's on the line calling 866-RALDO, our first call of the day. What's up, Ken? What are you thinking about?
Hey, brother. Hey, you know, Raul, there was a guy that uses that train all the time, whether I'm going to Boston or D.C. It's the best way to travel.
It is, sure.
But everything's a political thing. The simplest way to fix this is you put an engineer and a co-engineer in it. That's, you know, until they get ready to put these
good idea.
Technological things in. And what they do is the Northeast Corridor is such a useful train. It's better than an airport. It's better than anything. But, you know, the Congress, Harry Reid runs the, Harry Reid and I think Mitch McConnell are the guys that run that sort of side of the transportation department. What the heck do they know? What does Mitch McConnell in Kentucky and Harry Reid in Nevada know about a train? And they want to put trains in Nebraska. What?
You mean the oil?
Right.
The oil flow.
Right. We're talking Amtrak here. But I'm not even talking the oil stuff. I'm just talking Amtrak. Amtrak is.
I'm with you. I think it's a great idea. Until they get this thing installed, let's have a co-pilot. Where nobody could fall asleep or get on the phone or get in a fight with his girlfriend or his wife, you know, or nod out or take his drugs. I mean, I think that it's absolutely imperative to do something right now. Absolutely. I mean, I like it.
Okay.
All right, man. Good. In the Bronx, Tom's on the line. What's up, Tom?
Hey, Araldo, let me preface this by saying I love cops, firemen, all of them. I think they're great. But this morning, Matt Blasio is going to announce in the next day or two that he wants to give pension enhancements to those in the city services that get injured on duty. We already have that now. It's totally abused. We know that there's a lot of guys out there that don't deserve these disability pensions that get them. And now he wants to give additional, which is going to bankrupt the city. I think it's ridiculous. He wants to give it to sanitation, to correction, to cops, to fire. I think it's the wrong thing to do. Look what happened with Metro North.
Every train conductor on Long Island has a back pain and three quarters pay. Exactly. You're right.
And most of these, and I hate to say it, but a lot of firemen get injured in their 10th, let's say their 9th or 10th year. They continue to work for 20 years, and then they go out, they get the big pension, and they go and they do carpentry contracting and everything else on the side.
Well, we could ask de Blasio, but where is he today? Let's see, Berkeley and Santa Clara, California. We'll have to go out west to find our mayor. Tom, thank you for the call. 866-Geraldo is the number. I want to talk trains. I want to talk de Blasio. And then I want to talk Israel and Palestine in the book.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues. Geraldo, today and every day. 77 WABC.
You don't have to be Jewish to love Barbara. Of course, this is like the goddess singing in my house. This is a live performance, Barbara Streisand, in Israel. Bill Clinton was in attendance. Who else? A
bunch of Shimon Peres.
Shimon was there?
Bibi.
Bibi was there too?
Mm-hmm.
Knockout performance. Why are we doing it? Because 67 years ago today, David Ben-Gurion, who would become the first prime minister of the new state of Israel, proclaimed a Jewish state in Eretz Israel to be known as the State of Israel, the Jewish homeland, born on this date in 1948. It's only 3 years after the end of the barbaric attempt to eradicate the Jewish race in Europe, the Holocaust. I want to talk more about the big news in this front that on this day when Israel was born, the Pope is saying Israel has to share and that there is time now for the Palestinians to have their own independence day. We'll talk more about that right now. The focus of this broadcast, this signature broadcast on 77 WABC, is why in the world won't they install this technology that is guaranteed to save lives? Even now, as the cranes and the heavy equipment struggle to right those overturned, those wrecked cars, even now as they search for a possible eighth victim in the wreckage of train 188. We are asking why they don't have these this positive train control system installed on all the Amtrak corridor, particularly in the busy Northeast. What the hell is going on? They're cutting funding for Amtrak at exactly the wrong time. If they had some problems with the way Amtrak spends the money, they could have mandated that the money be spent to put in a positive train control, right? One of our callers in the previous segment had the suggestion that in the meantime, let's not wait for Congress. Let's not wait for the National Rail Administration. Let's not wait for anybody. Let's put a co-pilot in every one of those engines so you don't have someone on the phone talking to his girlfriend or falling asleep or whatever the hell he was doing, making up the 10 minutes he was behind on the schedule. Can you imagine? Is that what he was doing? Going 106 in a 50-mile-an-hour curve. 866 Geraldo, starting with PJ. What's up, PJ? Thanks for calling, man.
Hey, Geraldo. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on, like, the whole train Amtrak thing is trashy and everything, but I keep hearing, like, you know, like you were just saying about putting these trans whatever things to
positive
slow
train
the train
control
down.
Yep.
I just want to say I feel like they're turning the whole thing into like one of those trains that go around the Christmas tree, and all these conductors and engineers, you know, they're going to be put out of business.
But, you know, I was thinking that, and I'm glad you brought that up, PJ, because I was thinking the other day. Now, realistically, they have the driverless cars now, Google and so forth.
Yeah,
GPS
cars,
allows
exactly.
you to do that. But with the train, I would totally trust the driver. I mean, at the airport, don't they have
Newark Airport?
They're
they do, yeah.
driverless, right? Mm-hmm. And at JFK, I don't know if there's a conductor.
I don't
think
there is. Yeah,
and a computer runs the whole thing. You're perfectly safe. They know when to speed up, when to slow down. Go ahead, PJ.
Yeah, I actually heard something about the Google car the other day, and they were saying the biggest problem with it is the speed and distance and the human error part. But with a train, you know, it's such a slower process that even like you hit the brakes, that thing's just going to keep on moving. So it's almost
that's right.
Like, where does the human error really come into this?
I'm with you. I think it's a great idea. I would love conductorless trains or have the conductor on there. If something screws up with the computer, I trust the computer more than I trust, you know, the human hand. It's just too easy to say to yourself, oh, crap, I'm 10 minutes late, and this is my last stop, Philadelphia, unless they stop at Metro Park sometimes. But Philadelphia, last stop. I got 90 miles to make up 10 minutes. Zap it. I got all these horsepower right under my fingertips. Easy to do. Just zap it. Probably done it a million times. This one time, maybe a bolt was loose on the track or whatever it was, or maybe he didn't estimate just how powerfully he was accelerating. And you don't stop a roaring train on a dime. You just don't. I mean, there's so much momentum, so much energy involved there. In Edgewater, Barry, you a neighbor of mine, Barry?
I am not. Well, I'm down the road a piece. I'm not. You're up in the colony, if I
yep,
correctly.
Yep, in the colony, yep.
Right, I'm down at the other end of town in one of the high-rises.
Well, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
I've been down there for about 15 years in Edgewater. And I went to school just after Barbra Streisand in Brooklyn at Erasmus Hall.
So we have a lot in common. And we went back to Erasmus to see Neil Diamond. So look at all the things we got in common, Ben.
That's exactly right.
Right.
But, you know, I'm sitting, I'm listening to you, and I'm trying to do some work, and I open up the computer, and the first thing I see is the Republicans are slashing the budget, okay, on Amtrak right after this accident. The next thing I read is Donald Trump. Our resident genius, Donald Trump, he can fix everything, okay? Give it to me, let me fix. Of course, he wants to be president, probably, to fix it, instead of going in there and helping to try and fix it. So I question the leadership, okay? Where is Christie? Where is de Blasio? Other than traveling all over the country and really not paying attention and not coming up strong on this issue. The government helps the people. Where does it say the Amtrak and the post office have to be profitable? They provide service to people. They provide service to the citizens. We pay our taxes. We put our money towards that. That's what we want. I don't want the government out of Amtrak unless somebody can come along and say, well, we can make it profitable. Like I think the CSX or, you know, the Reading Railroad or whoever.
Yeah, Warren Buffett owns a bunch of railroads that make a lot of money. Norfolk Southern, a bunch of them.
Right.
I own some of that stock. I've watched that stock do pretty well.
That's why you live in Edgewater.
All right, Barry, I got to go, but you're absolutely right about. All right, now you have Chris Christie. Where's Chris Christie on this issue? He's running for president. He's in New Hampshire. Where's Bill de Blasio? He's running for Saint. I don't know where. He's in California today. But where are these elected leaders? Now, you mentioned Trump. Isn't it interesting? Now, I know Trump gets put down by a lot of people. I am filled with admiration for him. And you have to admit, whenever you have an infrastructure situation like this, an intractable problem that has defied solution for an unreasonable length of time, don't you think about Trump? I do. That golf course in the Bronx. For 30 years, it was a garbage dump. They let's make it a park. Let's make it a park. Trump finally came and made it a park. The Wallman Skating Rink, same thing. The West Side, the rail yards there, and all the crap that was on the West Side, all those tangled piers and everything else. And now it's a whole new neighborhood. You need a free enterprise Republican approach to solving these infrastructure problems. You have to deal with them as if they were business problems, not political problems. That's why I like Trump. That's why that's the approach you need to fix these railroads. We were in Spain last summer. We go on a train from Madrid to Barcelona. The train goes 180 miles an hour or 200 miles an hour. And you get there, it's like you're riding on air. Cuts right through this beautiful countryside. And you get there, you don't have to go through the security like you do at the airport. You don't have to schlep out to the airport. You know what it's like to go to Kennedy when you're going to Europe? So you got to get there a couple hours beforehand. That means you have to leave 3 hours before the flight. Yeah, you got to get there. Or if you take a plane to D.C. Let's assume you can't get LaGuardia. You go on over the Throgs Neck Bridge, the RFK Bridge, and it's backed up. So you got traffic there. So the ride to LaGuardia, which you can see from my apartment, 8 miles, can take you 45 minutes. It's ridiculous. So you go to the train, so easy. It takes you right to downtown Washington or downtown Philly, wherever you want to go. You don't have to go, like I said, through all of the chazarai of getting your stuff through TSA at the airport. And then then what is more romantic than a train whistle in the night? I'm sorry, living in Edgewater, that's one of the things that Metro North comes by when it comes under the George Washington Bridge. And you just think about romance, you think about far away, you think about the poetic aspects of life. And now you have to worry on the damn train that the conductor's on his cell phone with his girlfriend. He's going to miss the 50-mile-an-hour curve, and everyone's going to die. And we have positive train control, and we don't install it because, it's not the priority. What is the priority? I'd like to know that. I'd love to know what the mavens of Amtrak say is the priority in terms of spending the money.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
5 minutes to 11 o'clock. You know why the conductor is not talking to the authorities, Noam. He's not talking to the authorities for fear of an involuntary or vehicular manslaughter rap. That's why he's not talking to the authorities. If his negligence rises to that level or sinks to that level, there could be criminal charges. I mean, if he was grossly negligent. Now, the guy in the Bronx, they developed a defense pretty quickly that he was on some kind of meds. I recall, I don't want to...
Rockefeller you're talking about, the one who was beyond
right,
the controls.
And, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe his name is Rockefeller. All right, let me squeeze in Ray. Can I squeeze in Ray here? Ray in Long Island, what's up, man?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. I've been on this planet 68 years of my life, and I keep wondering why people keep dancing around a problem. A problem is when you have cutbacks, when you have things, they always cut back on the people that time. This guy left 16 minutes late. I guarantee he was pushed by his supervisors, oh, you got to make up the timing.
Good saying, yes, sir.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Come on. Jedi, oh,
Bobby Darin, one of the first to have a residence in Las Vegas. One of those cool guys, cool cat. So there's no reports. Another train disaster also in Pennsylvania. The other side of the state in Pittsburgh just now. Shortly after 10 o'clock this morning, a freight train derailing in Pittsburgh. And they're reporting a second unrelated train crash in South Carolina. So in Johnston, South Carolina, about 50 miles west of Columbia, South Carolina, another train crash. I'm telling you, that's the big scandal. I did the 2020 report, the condition of the tracks and so forth. It's outrageous. I mean, compared to car driving, train travel is still way safer, way, way safer. I mean, I think we still lose 30,000 a year in car crashes and 1,000 a year in train crashes. But on trains with the rails, you'd think that they'd work it out. But we want this positive train control system to be deployed. This is a national emergency. Let's get this done. For goodness sakes, there's no excuse. Fred in Comac, thank you for calling 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind, Fred?
Hi, Rivaldo. Yesterday when I heard the news, I knew where it was all going, and sure enough, I was right. The train was going too fast, and it came off the tracks. And now I think that the rest of it is obvious also, why the train was going 106 miles an hour. I think the solution to this is not the system you were just talking about, but I think the solution to it is two or three engineers per train, all the time, all signing in for each other, no way to get around it. And the point is that the train weighs tons, hundreds of tons. I have no idea what it weighs. How can you have that moving along on the tracks and you have one person up front, and you really don't know what that person is really doing?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. And, of course, you're right. Look at the Lufthansa pilot in France.
Oh, yes.
Waiting until his partner goes to the men's room, locks him out.
It's the exact same
and
thing.
And airlines now have a rule. We have a rule in the States. And now I think they've just adopted it, German Wings or whatever they call the subsidiary of Lufthansa that was involved in the tragic crash in the Alps. Now they have a rule, two in the cockpit, no matter what, always.
Always.
And I agree with you, Fred, and it just seems that, to save chump change, that's what you're talking about in terms of a co-pilot in an airliner or in an engine pulling a train going over 100 miles an hour. I think that they should definitely make this adjustment on an emergency basis. All right, I think enough about trains. If anything else develops, we'll get back to it. You're saying 40,000 car deaths? I think it was 30,000. I think it's down. All right, let me go now to the uncomfortable reality. It's uncomfortable in my family. It's uncomfortable in a lot of Jewish families. You know, you have a major movement now in campuses throughout the United States where it's a boycott, divest, and some other protest, the Israeli-Palestinian situation, the fact that this is going on now so many years. And I thought that today, as, you know, at least in the Western calendar, the Julian calendar that we all use, this is the day that the nation known as Israel was born. I mean, the Jews of Palestine were dancing in the streets of Jerusalem 67 years ago. And you had the future Prime Minister, David Ben-Gurion, proclaiming the birth of the sovereign nation, a Jewish state in Eretz Israel, to be known as the State of Israel. And so the Jewish homeland, ladies and gentlemen, delighted to say happy birthday to Israel, born on this date, May 14th, 1948. And you have to put it in the context of the time, 1948. I mean, I was not even 5 years old. It was only 3 years after the end of World War II in Europe, the end, therefore, of the barbaric attempt to eradicate the Jews of Europe, the Holocaust, Shoah, during which the Nazis killed as many as 6 million. I mean, they killed 50 million. I think they're responsible for 50 million total deaths, 6 million Jews specifically. They're had never been in the modern industrial era, at least. I'm mindful, obviously, of the Armenians, but there had never been in the industrial age a modern nation that employed its industry to eradicate a race of people. I mean, it's so absolutely unfathomable. That's why I don't like comparing the Holocaust to anything other than the Holocaust. But that sympathy for the stricken Jews of World War II played a large role, let's face it, in the decision by the United Nations. Many of the General Assembly then and now, not particularly keen on Jews or on Israel. But in the wake of World War II, in that wave of sympathy, where the world recognized what had been going on, the United Nations General Assembly voted to partition what was the British Mandate of Palestine. They partitioned it. They divided it roughly in half between the Arab section and the Jewish section. And we all know that the ink was barely dry on the Declaration of Independence, Ben-Gurion's declaration, before all the surrounding Arab nations invaded the new nation in the first of several failed attempts to wipe Israel off the face of the map in the Middle East. Israel was brand spanking new when everybody around them invaded. And the very existence of Israel, the brand new state, hung in the balance there. And to a certain extent, that existential threat, that threat to its very existence, the existential threat continues. It haunts modern Israel, making normal life there still elusive. I mean, you could vacation in Israel and have a great time, but wars and violence are as much a part of Israel's life as the historic relics, the stages of the cross, the Mediterranean weather, all that stuff. But despite the external threats, the real external threats to Israel's existence, you can put Iranian nukes in there, anything you want. Despite all the known threats to Israel and the fact that it's surrounded and outnumbered, it is very clear that the world has now that sympathy that led to the birth of Israel 3 years after World War II ended. That sympathy now, if it hasn't evaporated, without a doubt, the world has lost patience with the Jewish state because of Israel's refusal to allow the other half of that old British mandate, the Palestinian Arabs, also to have their own country. You have Israeli and American objections for sure, but now you have in the same General Assembly of the United Nations, you have more than 135 countries that have recognized the state of Palestine. You have 135 countries. They've recognized Palestine. Now I dare you to find it on a map. Find Palestine on a map. Now, of the 135 countries that have recognized Palestine, they include Britain, France, Spain, Ireland, I mean, the Nordic countries, Sweden, and so forth. I mean, we got some real friends of Jews, friends of Israel, friends of the United States that have now said, we recognize Palestine, even though Israel doesn't, even though the United States does not. But now you have this big development, and this is what I wanted to talk to you about. You have, first of all, you agree with me, I think. You folks listening right now know you too, I believe, that Pope Francis is a special character. He's not like the guy, Benedict, that preceded. He's not like a lot of popes in the modern era. He's very special. He's special in a lot of ways. He's charismatic. He's humble. He's a Latino. I mean, from my selfish point of view, Spanish speaking. He was rapping with Raul Castro in Spanish the other day. But he also has tremendous moral currency because of the kind of person that he is, that humility, the service that he provides to the poor and so forth. So Pope Francis's Vatican is different than the Vatican that Jews have had an ambivalent relationship over the years. The Vatican that in World War II gave aid and comfort to the Nazis and all the rest of it. This is a different Vatican. Now you got Pope Francis running the Vatican, which is a country as well as the head of the Catholic Church. So now you have the nation of the Vatican, which carries the symbolic strength of hundreds of millions of Catholics around the world, led by this popular pope who is clearly pro-Israel, loves the Jews, he loves schmoozing. But you have this popular pro-Israeli pope clearly acting now in response to statements made by Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu during, you know, the election campaign that we covered so closely, bitterly contested. And everybody remembers that Bibi said he would never allow the establishment of a Palestinian country, a Palestinian state, on his watch. So now you have the Pope reacting to that. Can Israel now continue? Can the United States continue to refuse to recognize the need for a Palestinian state in the face of the 135 nations that say the time has come for an independent Palestine, and now including Pope Francis's Vatican? What's Washington going to do now? What are the Republicans and the whole Christian community going to do now? What is Israel going to do now that the Vatican has just announced that they will sign a treaty recognizing an independent Palestine? Hasn't the time come for the United States and foremost for Israel to recognize an independent Palestine? We'll debate that, Ed.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Okay, your turn. 866 Geraldo, 866-437-2536. I think Washington has to do much more to pressure Israel into keeping its word about Palestine. There should be a two-state solution. I noticed that Marco Rubio now, another of the Republicans lining up to kiss Sheldon Adelson's backside, has now said the time is not right. Well, the conditions don't exist for a two-state solution, Palestine and Israel. Baloney. When will they ever exist? Did they exist 10 years ago? About 20 years ago? About 30 years ago? About 40 years ago? 48 years Israel's been occupying the West Bank. 48 years. Our fabulous country, my son bar mitzvah day. I love Israel. I have a Jewish star on my hand. Israel is a dream come true. And they're occupying another people. How long? How long? How many years? The Pope now says recognize Palestine. The Vatican will be recognizing Palestine. Alan and Chelsea, my first call on this debate, this great debate. Alan, what's on your mind, buddy?
God bless you, my Zionist brother. And as a child of Israel, born in 1967 in Hadassah Medical Center, I want to invite the Pope to move the Vatican to Jerusalem. And I want you to close your eyes for a minute, Geraldo, because you know the geographics of the Church of the Sepulchre and the 14 stations of the cross.
I do, and I have the visual.
And you know that all of that is Muslim-owned. Think about the prosperity that would immediately be infused to Israel if these emissaries that occupy the Vatican, which would still stay one of the most beautiful square blocks or miles on the planet, would be moved. And that the spiritual part of what the Pope speaks now occupy an accompanying geography that makes sense.
All right, Alan, I'm straining because I know that through your intellect and eloquence, there's deep Jewish satire there, so I want you to get to the payoff.
There is no payoff. Think about if the new settlers to Israel did not affect the Muslims as the Jewish settlers do. If the Vatican was to move to Israel, think about what would be the prosperity.
Oh, come on. What are you talking about? What do you want to accomplish?
I want to accomplish the Pope putting his money where his mouth is. If he believes in the state of Israel.
So you want him to give up Rome? Come on, Alan. Does that mean that Barack Obama has to move there too?
Well, why? Wait a minute.
Or the 135 other nations that have recognized Palestine, they're all going to move there?
No, but I'm talking about prosperity. Lighting the fuse for Palestine.
Christians spending a lot of money there.
We need economic prosperity.
You need to free people who've been occupied for 48 years. That's what you got to do. All right, we're going to debate this for the next half hour. So get your 866 Geraldo on speed dial. And to get Noam involved, he blushes when I started off on this I know you equivocate over my rants. Don't tell me you don't.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
No more left, no more right. Lift your head and see the light. I am proud, can't you see? For at last I am free. No.
Johnny Mathis, speaking about the fulfillment of the promise, the creation of Israel, 67 years ago today. Now the Pope says, let the Palestinians have a similar resolution to their wandering. Is Eric in Queens? Hey, Eric, thanks for calling 866. Arlo, what's on your mind, buddy?
Through the years, there's been so many lies and misinformation about Israel that even the supporters of Israel, like you, start believing some of the half-truths, quarter-truths, and third-truths. Well, a third of the truth is there is, in the land of Israel, partially the old land of Palestine. But what conveniently people forget, and in your case, just maybe just not knowing it, if you look at any map of old Palestine from a long, long time ago, one-third of that old Palestine is in Jordan, one-third of that old Palestine is in Syria, and one-third of that old Palestine is in Israel. And as soon as Israel became a country, the Jordanians and Syrians kicked the Palestinians out of their land and said, go fight for your land from Israel. And we've been fed the Israel is occupying the Palestinians for so long that Jordan and Syria is never in the equation. And until there's truth and honesty in the debate, you'll never have peace.
Well, you know something, Eric? I think that there is no way, from the sound of your voice, that you would allow an independent Palestine on whatever land.
I think you happen to be wrong. I actually believe that the Palestinians need a homeland, but it'll never happen.
And so, and why can't it be in the West Bank and Gaza?
It'll never happen unless there is truth, and unless the countries that work.
So that's the reason. The reason there's not an independent Palestine is because the Jordan surrounding countries have their own sins.
Right. Jordan doesn't want to give. No, but Jordan and Syria kicked these people out of their land.
Well, so, in Jordan, Jordan is two-thirds Palestinian right now.
Okay, right. So, but a third of Jordan is old Palestine. How come they're not giving up any of their land?
Well, the West Bank used to be Jordan.
The point is this. The point is that even someone who's a big supporter of Israel like you probably didn't realize that a third.
Oh, okay, Eric. Thank you for the geography lesson. There's a million historic nuances that can be invoked. We have to deal with the reality. Except for the United States and Israel, virtually every country in the United Nations General Assembly has recognized Palestine. And now the Pope has joined Britain and France and Spain and these other countries that we all love in saying we have to recognize Palestine. And what we get instead is settlers moving continually into the West Bank. Settlement construction continues despite the objections of the world. And Jews generally, and Israelis, some of them, I mean, not all, obviously, are perplexed. Why don't they understand us? Why don't they understand our plight? It's not going to fly anymore. I mean, you can dig in your heels and defy even the Pope and Britain and France and the Obama administration. At a certain point, you're going to be all alone. Yeah, Max, a new voice in New Jersey. Hey, Max.
Hey, Geraldo. How are you today?
Good.
First off, what do you think of this thought that the Pope is a pro-Palestinian state, possibly to gain, you know, some points with the Arab world, you know, with that ISIS threat coming to Rome and everything like that?
I don't know. I assume it would be part of any calculation if he's a smart guy, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not, who knows if he really agrees with it or not. He might just be trying to, you know, gain a little popularity in the Arab world. And who's going to guarantee the security of the state?
Why would you question the sincerity of the Pope when he makes a statement, though?
Well, you know,
because
like
you disagree with him?
I do slightly disagree, because everybody is saying that there should be a two-state solution,
including the last three American presidents.
You're right, but the presidents weren't pushing it like the president we have right now. And I mean, you know, you said you've been to Israel before and everything like that, so you could probably attest this. How many Palestinian territories did you go visit?
I visited all of them.
And
I have friends in the occupied West Bank. And not only that, I was friends with their parents. And these are the children who are now fully grown, and they have children. That's how long it's been. It's been 48 years.
Palestinian families you're referring to?
Yes, and some of them are Christian.
Because me, as an American Jewish tourist, I was never allowed in. The Israeli checkpoints did not allow me to cross into those
I think that was for your own safety.
Exactly the point. And how many Jewish settlements are like that? None of them. They welcome you with open arms. That's my point, is that how can you go with a two-state solution when these people that you're dealing with don't even want a sense of security or a sense of...
Well, Palestinians are not allowed to travel freely in Israel, and Israelis are not allowed to travel freely in Palestine. That is a fact. I don't know. Sid, give me some insight here we don't have. Sid, hello, Sid.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're
listening to your program, and you mentioned several points here. You talked about the occupation. You talked about the British Mandate. You talked about the UN resolution of 1948. But you never mentioned one thing, and each and every time, the Arabs refused the negotiations, how they refused the UN resolution, how they refused the British Mandate, and how they swear to eliminate the Jewish state and all the Jews there. They're in.
Right. What's your point, Sid?
My point is that the other point that you're missing is that although Netanyahu did that one time say that he's against a state for the Palestinians,
it would never happen on his watch.
Okay, but he did change his mind later on. He said that is not what I meant. Whatever. But he did change his mind, and it won't happen on his watch. But because as long as they threaten the Jewish state with elimination, and they refuse to recognize the Jewish state.
So, Sid, are you concerned at all that the Pope has now said he's in favor of an independent Palestine and is recognizing Palestine?
The Pope is saying that, but is the Palestinian people willing to recognize Israel?
That's an excellent question.
Okay, well, there you go. You can't go any further than that. You just answered the question. If you want Israel to recognize them, why won't they recognize Israel?
Oh, I think they would. I think they've made it very clear that they will recognize. I was at the foreign ministers in 2002 when they said they would recognize Israel.
And have you read any of the speeches of Abbas about Israel in it to his own people? Have you read the speeches by Hamas?
Sid, you have 135 plus nations that want to recognize Palestine.
Where were these 135 nations during World War II when the Jews were being killed?
Well, what did we do?
Well, what did we do? It's right. But that.
All right, sorry. I meant to cut you off there, but I don't know. Anytime I bring it up, it becomes a circular discussion that goes nowhere.
And you get depressed.
And I get depressed. And I always end up feeling depressed because I see no light. I think I see no minds being changed. I see, to me, this is a big event. Vatican is recognizing Palestine. That's the news. That's the news. The Vatican, led by Pope Francis, now recognizes independent Palestine, along with Britain, France, Spain, etc. I mean, that means something. I mean, we can, you know, Sheldon Adelson can throw money around. The Republican Party can dig in its heels. You hear, the candidates, Israel, right or wrong. I just think that's the continuation of the recipe for disaster. And the worst thing about it is, it's not even that. The worst thing about it is that it is unfair and un-Jewish.
That's the worst thing about it.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
You know, I'm not going to talk about Israel anymore. It just makes me depressed because it just seems so circular. You don't convince anybody. Just it's frustrating. Maybe tomorrow. Let's talk about tomorrow. George Stephanopoulos is admitting that he gave $50,000 to the Clinton Foundation. The only reason that is interesting is that he gave the $50,000 to the Clinton Foundation and didn't mention it when he was grilling that guy that wrote the hit job, Clinton Cash.
Conveniently forgot about it.
It's just like the New York Times guy whose son got stuck up by the cop. He was complaining of his black son. Forgot to mention it was a black cop that did it. You know, so the good guys lie too, or misrepresent.